Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. Here's your MotorWeek podcast host, John Davis.
Welcome, everyone, to a milestone MotorWeek podcast. This is the number big 50, our 50th podcast.
What anniversary is that?
I'm not sure. What is 50? I should remember.
Unobtainium or what?
Golden. Our golden anniversary podcast. And we want to thank all of you that have been letting us know how much you enjoy them. And in the studio again today are two of our regulars, road test producer and two-wheeling reporter, Brian Robinson.
Hello out there.
And our associate producer and all-around chief car test guy, Ben Davis.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, before we get into our rundown of vehicles and our mailbag and also our lightning round, I want to touch on the Geneva Motor Show, which is the most recent international auto show. It's just wrapping up. And we'll go a chance on a future podcast to talk about it a little more in depth. But there are a few vehicles that were shown there that either will be coming to the United States or will have an impact on cars and in our market. One of them, Volkswagen, showed the new concept of their microbus. This is not the first time that they've tried to bring back the iconic microbus of the 50s. However, this one, while it was painted in a two-tone livery and had a big VW on the front like the original, I don't know, it comes off a little bit more. Someone actually said it looks a little bit more like a Japanese or Korean people mover than it does a German. But
I like the white walls, though.
It even had white walls over it.
They had a concept a few years ago. I think that looked better than this one. But I think there's a lot of people that will buy that thing, if no matter what it looks like, if it ever comes out.
I do, too.
People ask me all the time, ever since the new Beetle came out, when are they going to bring out the van again?
It'll be more successful, I think, than the Chrysler cloned van they've got now. Also, it was the 50th anniversary kickoff for Jaguar, celebrating the XKE's anniversary, kind of the quintessential Jaguar coupe. They did a big ceremony. I mean, it's hard to believe it was 1961 when that car first came out.
I remember it well.
This week is 25 years for Acura, too.
And it's also the 70th anniversary of Jeep.
Wow.
So there's a lot of stuff going on there.
As well as our 50th podcast.
And our 50th podcast. How many more anniversaries can we celebrate on one show? Saab showed a new concept to give everybody an idea of what their future styling might be, and it's fairly un-Saab-like. The latest news from that company is that they are moving ahead with bringing out new models, and their new crossover is just getting ready to hit the market.
That they're still around. Yeah, that would be the biggest news that I... Yeah.
It is for a lot of people. A lot of us have been seeing pictures of the new Ferrari FF, a very interesting and not very traditional looking Ferrari, more with that old bread wagon type rear end that used to be popular back in the 60s. Volkswagen, again, is back to them. They've revamped the Tiguan with slightly. Mercedes had probably the most important car news for the U.S. with a new C-Class Coupe, which is quite stunning-looking vehicle. Volvo is putting their stamp on the technology of a diesel hybrid, which a lot of people have been asking for, thinking you'll get the combination of fuel efficiency of a clean diesel and, of course, they have a hybrid. There was a new Lamborghini, the LP704, Aventador, I believe.
Sounds good to me.
There's been quite a bit hubbub in the press about it for the last couple of weeks. More appearances of the Audi A3 concept.
Back to the diesel hybrid. What kind of numbers are they talking about on that thing?
I haven't seen the official, what they might be calling the official numbers yet, but what I'm being told is that where you're seeing, you won't see like the 30% improvement over a gasoline hybrid that you would see having a diesel engine over just a gas engine. It's probably going to be in the order of another 10 to 15%. And I'm not sure if they actually release numbers or not, so I'll have to go back and check on that. But
tune in next time.
It certainly seems like it. Yeah, Dave Scrivener of our staff is on his way back from Geneva with all the details. But the most important thing is that technology, which a lot of people have been asking about in this country as well as in Europe, is getting closer to production. The Europeans really have not embraced embraced gasoline electric hybrids, mainly because since gasoline is so much more expensive than diesel there, they feel like it's a step backwards. It's like the efficiency, the extra mileage is canceling out by the cost of the fuel. So a diesel hybrid seems to make very good sense for the Europeans and could possibly make sense here as well. With that said, a lot of places that we would like to see diesels and really have not seen them very much is in more crossovers and SUVs, especially the large 6, 7, and 8 passenger ones. So we wanted to talk about two of them today. One is the one of the vehicles that won our Driver's Choice Award for Best Large Utility, the Dodge Durango. And the other is the Ford Explorer, which has also completely revamped itself. America's once upon a time favorite SUV has now been recast in a kinder, gentler, but according to Ford, still very capable light. With that said, what do you guys think about these two vehicles? Pros and cons, who would fit in one and who would probably like the other?
Well, neither one are diesel powered, just to clarify that.
Yes, that's
at least
correct.
At this point in time. But like you said, they're both attempts at more modernizing the traditional SUV and kind of getting rid of the frame, making them more crossover like, and making them more friendly for the families. They use them for family things. And the Ford Explorer takes more of a crossover front-wheel drive take on it, V6 power. The Durango sticks with the traditional rear-wheel drive, two-speed transfer case, V8, V6. And so you can kind of take it from there, which one you think would be right for you.
The Explorer, It's a whole different animal from the outgoing model, for sure. First thing I noticed when I got in is, whoa, this windshield's really raked back. It's almost a sports car inside. And with that big truck A-pillars, too, were in my field of vision in parking lot speeds. And on the highway, it was all right because you're looking straight forward. But back twisty roads and stuff, seemed like that A-pillar was always in my way.
Almost felt like a minivan windshield, didn't it?
It's funny you mentioned minivan, because my other concern with that vehicle was, no matter how I adjusted the steering wheel, I couldn't get it not to feel like a minivan or like a school bus. It seemed like
it
came straight up out of the floor, not down from the dash.
Huh.
I mean, it's hard to go wrong this day and age when buying an SUV, because they're all great picks. It's just, little quirks in here that you can either learn to live with or not, but
I mean, Ford has done, they've taken the two-speed transfer case and done away with that on the new Explorer, but they put in its place a Range Rover, Land Rover, Range Rover style multi-terrain switch, which frankly works very, very well. I had a chance to drive it over the Explorer on some extremely rough terrain. It didn't have any problems. So in that aspect, I'm not sure they gave up very much. But the new chassis and only having a V6 with a four-cylinder turbo coming later, you do get the situation it's no longer going to fit some families' towing needs. Your towing limit is now about 5,000, so down considerably. Where the Durango, they've managed to take a welded unibody frame and still tow 7,400 pounds, and you can get a V8. So I guess what I'm saying is, I think they're two different animals. One, the Explorer, will fit most lifestyles. They're looking for something more modern, more lightweight, more fuel efficient, and quite stylish. Where the Durango is the traditional SUV brought completely up to date with a new powertrain and the new V6 they've got, a good stout carryover V8, great towing, and frankly, because it's bigger, more room for 7 passengers.
I was almost going by styling and features and looks alone. I was squarely in the Explorer camp, but after driving them both back-to-back, I would definitely prefer the Durango. The Explorer, I wouldn't say it feels awkward. It just, when you drive it, it feels much bigger vehicle than what it is, whereas the Durango is opposite.
Yeah, it is.
It feels like a much smaller vehicle than what it is.
Would you call either one of these a truck?
I would call the Durango
a truck. Yeah, it's
still
a truck.
Strictly two-speed transfer case, rear-wheel drive.
Yeah, okay.
I can't call the Explorer front-wheel drive a truck. I just don't think
it's a crossover.
That.
Okay, let's move on to one of the, if not the most, highly anticipated car of 2011. and that is the Fiat 500. Ben, you got up close and personal with this tiny little Italian.
That I did.
And, you know, what? A lot of folks have a lot of prejudices against Fiat products.
Italians?
Fiat products.
Oh, okay.
No, just Fiat products. Those of us my age that lived through the 60s, when basically they were still being sold in sizable numbers and saw, you know, that while they always drove well, they weren't always the most reliable. It's a different company now, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it couldn't be a better time for this vehicle to hit the U.S. It's funny you say misconceptions about
stereotypes.
Right,
stereotypes.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Thanks. Because I'm sure Mini had a similar. I'm sure Minis weren't the most reliable back in the day either.
Hardly.
Yeah, so it doesn't take much to come a long way. This vehicle, it's actually 6 inches shorter than a Mini, I believe.
A little bit smaller.
Yeah. Obviously, a little bit bigger than the Smart. But once you get inside, I mean, I'm 5'10". I had plenty of headroom, plenty of thigh room. Seats were great. You're only dealing with 101 horsepower here, 98 foot-pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to kind of change your mentality about, just keep momentum up, rely on handling through the corners, not so much braking. But, I mean, after a while, it gets really fun. The gearbox is extremely well-mated. Clutch feels great. It's light. Shifter's quick. I mean, it's a whip to drive around. It's a lot of fun.
I own a 2002 Mini, and I know exactly what you're talking about with limited horsepower because it was the first year of the new one. So what it came down to me for was the handling and the feeling of solidity. You've already said the handling felt good. Did it feel like a solid, well-made car?
It absolutely felt solid. I wasn't getting a ton of feedback through the wheel. I wasn't getting any kind of shake or shimmy or rattle or anything from anywhere. And I was carving mountains pretty hard. The only thing that bothers me about the car is the, I mean, fuel economy wise, it's not that hard to find a slightly bigger car with better fuel economy.
I was expecting much better numbers.
You're only putting the numbers I have from Fiat, 30 city, 38 highway for manual, 27 city, 34 highway for automatic. Well, I mean, they're not bad. I was just.
But you can get a lot of compact cars that do high 30s and even 40 miles per gallon.
Sure, without looking too far.
Yeah, and that's got to be, for a car that small, that's got to be one of your big selling points is fuel economy.
You would think. I mean, because a car is considerably smaller than a Fiesta, for instance.
Price-wise, it seems to be very well priced and designed to go straight up against the Mini. What's it, about 15 grand to start?
15.5 to start. That's the pop model. The model I drove, the sport model, 17.5. That was a handful. I mean, that's all the car you'll need. And they have a lounge model, 19.5, that starts. And there's, I believe next year, the Abarth model comes out with the turbocharger for that should be enough power for
that's,
anybody.
All those prices are considerably less expensive than a comparable Mini right now.
Probably.
They're quite way less.
It's cute like the Mini. I don't know if sales would be more like Mini or more like Smart. What do you think it'll be?
I think it's going to take them a while just because it's a brand that's completely new. Mini sort of sold when they got here. They had a lot of hype. And they did a lot of their marketing letting people know that it was basically a small BMW. And I think that cachet gave them a lot of folks that might not have looked at them otherwise. It wasn't just another Mini Cooper. It was a BMW-engineered Mini Cooper. Right. I'm not sure Fiat's got that same cachet, so it'll probably take a while. But the prices are certainly good. The interior of it, having sat in quite a few of them, is a little more to a lot of people's likings in that the speedometer is actually right in front of the driver and not sitting over in the middle of the dash like it is the Mini. I can't tell you how many people I know say they would never buy a Mini because of that. It doesn't particularly bother me. You get used to it. It's so big. But did that have any impression on you when you drove it? Did it make you feel more comfortable?
Much like you, it doesn't matter where my speedometer is, as long as my tax right out in front of me.
Yeah, who looks at their speedometer?
But, I mean, I think the Fiat 500 dash was, I liked it a lot, and I'm not sure if it was just because I'm so tired of looking at a Mini dash. They really haven't changed that much.
Not much.
Or, you know, there was just more of a harmony with the outside of the vehicle. There was some body-colored panels inside, and I guess the Mini does have the same amount of levers and switches, kind of old school.
Oh, yeah, very old school.
British.
The back seat of both seems to be similar. I mean, they're not someplace where a six-footer is going to want all drive, well, stay all day, but you could get back there.
Yeah, it's definitely capable of getting any of your friends anywhere you need them to go.
Okay, let's move along now to our lightning round. This is where I asked the guys to share their opinions on a topic that's in the headlines. And at the end of 2 minutes, we will hear the bell ring from Michelle, who our official timekeeper and producer. Okay, and this fits in with what we were talking about with the Fiat 500 and a lot of other new small cars. Consumer taste for small cars tends to follow trends in gas prices, which at the moment we're recording this are headed straight up. And indeed, gas may be getting back towards $4 a gallon very, very quickly. So has Detroit got their timing right with new small cars like the Fiesta, the 500, over at Chevy, the Sonic? Or is it just not in the American DNA to buy subcompact and compact cars in huge numbers? Are compacts and subcompacts going to become the new standard for Americans if gas stays high?
No way. I mean, there's always going to be a market for small cars, and they're an important part of the market. But we just do too much stuff around here that, you know, hardly anybody can exist with a subcompact car as their only car. I mean, at some point in time, you're going to need to take somebody somewhere and haul something somewhere. So, you know, they're an important part, but I don't ever see big numbers going up huge.
Ben?
I'll take the opposite side of the field. I think that maybe we are in the beginnings of everybody in small cars. Small cars have never been better than they are now. There's certainly a wide range of selection out there, and I think people might be downplaying the yearly vacation, the, you know, taking the dogs everywhere kind of thing, just because it's getting harder and harder to afford.
Seems to me that there, if you have more than one vehicle in your family, and I think, Brian, both of you made very good points. If you have more than one vehicle in your family, you've got room for a small car just because you don't always need one, and you can save fuel economy there. That's my household's like this. We have the Mini Cooper, and then we've got a larger old Volvo wagon when we want to carry a lot of stuff around, and a pickup truck. So, you know, we've got a variety of vehicles, but I know that my spouse drives the Mini whenever she can because she's just going into town, and she can save fuel, so she likes it. I think Americans are going to be more interested in knowing that they can buy midsize and maybe large compacts that are more fuel efficient. I'm just not convinced. I have to lean more towards Brian's camp that we're going to see a flood of people going to subcompacts, unless maybe gas not only goes above $4, but maybe heads to $5.
Yeah, and the regular compacts, not the subcompacts, and even small family cars are getting much better mileage now. So.
Yeah, 40's kind of the new black when it comes to cars.
Yeah, true.
Thank you, Michelle. Okay, we're going to move on now to our Motorweek mailbag. This one comes from Steve down in Florida. Really good question, Steve, and I'm not sure we've got enough time to answer it completely, but here we go. I'm thinking of buying a used car, something I have never done before. What do I need to keep in mind? Okay, what are the most important things that you think Steve needs to consider when buying a used car? And for that, we're going to turn first to our used car buying expert, Ben Davis.
The guy who buys
more used cars.
That's true.
Between him and his dad.
First of all, Steve, you didn't clarify if you were going to try to go through the dealer or a private owner. My advice, if you're trying to go through a dealer, is to target a specific model that you're looking for, and then see if any dealer carries a warranted or a guaranteed use warranty.
Certified
Lexus. A lot of people do that. That would be your best bet for that. As far as private owner goes, and I've seen this a lot, you'd be amazed at how many people buy a car without ever looking underneath of it. Granted, you can do all your Carfax and background checking and stuff, but private owner, you get a chance to meet the guy that owned the car, see if he has any kind of service records, and by all means, get underneath of it and make sure there's no leaks. Make sure it's dry under there. There's no signs of any kind of frame damage, clamping equipment where the frame was straightened at one time or another, general bushing wear and all that kind of stuff. Really look under it hard. And by all means, test drive it until there's no questions in your mind about, is it going to squeak? Does it handle right? Funny noises everywhere.
Right now, there's such a the small inventory of used cars that in many cases, when you look at monthly payments, you can actually buy a smaller new car for about the price of a slightly larger used car. Used car prices are very high right now. But, you know, buyer beware. You know, if you are buying it from an individual, you really have to, like Ben said, check it out very carefully because they may not necessarily be telling you the truth about where the car came from.
Yeah, don't be scared to ask them if you can have your mechanic check it out. A lot of people with nothing to hide have no problems with that.
And if the car has recently been retitled, like they've only owned it for a couple of months and they said, well, they got it from a relative, be very afraid that they might be a curbstoner, someone who's sort of selling used cars commercially but doesn't have a license.
That's another thing, too. Make sure the title, if you're buying from a private owner, doesn't have any liens on it. You'd be surprised people that would buy a car with a title with a lien and then realize they got to pay the rest of that off. And the other thing is, on the title, make sure the VIN number on the title matches the VIN number on the vehicle.
Exactly.
And if it's a deal that sounds too good to be true, it definitely is.
Yeah.
There's, you know, my most recent used car I bought was a used pickup truck, and I found it was from a dealer, and it had a warranty with it, but it was priced $2,000 less than another truck on their lot, the same brand, but slightly different in equipment. And I couldn't figure out what was going on here. And I finally discovered that the truck I was interested in was white, and the other truck that was more expensive was black. And the black truck did not appeal to a lot of folks. The white truck looked like a work truck.
Yeah.
And a lot of people didn't want that. So they were willing to pay more for the black truck. So sometimes when you see a low price, before you jump at it, think about what you're getting and do your research. You'll either find that the price is so low it doesn't make sense and there's something wrong, or you'll come up with a good reason why it might be less. I mean, just take your time. Don't be forced into
Common sense. Do we still send T-shirts?
Still send T-shirts out
there. If he's interested in used, I do have some used T-shirts as well.
I think he wants a new T-shirt.
All right.
Thank you, Steve. I hope that helps give you a little bit of your answer. And by the way, there's more information about all this subject matter on our website at motorweek.org. Pat Goss, our resident technician, could basically fill up a whole hour radio show talking about...
I think he does that
every week about used cars. That brings to a close this golden anniversary Motorweek podcast number 50. I want to thank everyone in the studio, Brian Robinson and Ben Davis. Also, our audio engineer, Jim Bigwood, who podcast after podcast makes sure that we come through loud and clear. Our podcast creator, Bob Mixter. And most of all, our producer, Michelle Parker, the lady with the bell. Thank you very much for joining us. Be sure to catch the next episode of Motor Week on your local public television stations and also on your cable at Discovery's HD Theater on Turbo Tuesday. Till next time, I'm John Davis. For all of us at Motor Week, thanks very much for being a part of our lives.
You have been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at motorweek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive magazine series, each week on your local PBS station.